Welcome to Pivot to Prosperity, the podcast to help you work less and make more money, sponsored by Pivotal Real Estate Investments. We will show you how you can build wealth and income while improving communities through commercial real estate, like apartments, self-storage facilities, medical offices, and more without demanding much time. How's that sound? I am your host, Jenny Bowling, and I've been in real estate for 40 years, bought hundreds of properties for government and other clients. My fellow government workers and clients will likely find this very powerful information. When I learned how easy it is these days to own commercial property with all the tax benefits and wealth building attributes without the big money requirements, that was pivotal information that I am absolutely compelled to share. So every Tuesday at 2, we will release a new episode showing how the industry operates, how we find the deals, package the information, and offer it to our investors, and how so many investors are achieving goals of financial freedom and becoming more of who they want to be. We want to help you work less and make more by pivoting to prosperity. Hello, hello. Jenny Bowling here with Pivot to Prosperity, brought to you by Pivotal Real Estate Investments, where we help our investors build wealth and income through passive investing in commercial real estate that improves communities. And today we have Igor Shokolov, and he is in my mastermind. It's called Raise Masters. And thank you for joining us, Igor. Welcome.
Yes, thank you, Jenny. And it's always a pleasure to be part of the show and share your experience, right, as much as you can. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Igor is the founder and managing partner of Avista Fund and is a former professional athlete who transitioned into successful entrepreneurship and real estate investment. Guided by discipline and a relentless drive for excellence, Igor has founded and managed thriving companies and businesses in Southern California. In 2015, Igor ventured into real estate and established Avista Fund in 2020. This privately held firm focuses on raising capital from investors and investing in income-generating value-add multifamily properties. Their mission is to provide local as well as international investors with access to U.S. real estate, safeguarding and growing their wealth amidst high inflation rates in their local countries and currencies. They're currently serving as a limited partner to 17, now 19 different real estate deals, 3,050, which is now more multifamily units with a cumulative value over $483 million now. Igor's professional journey exemplifies a relentless pursuit of excellence supported by his values-driven approach to business and investment. Through Avista Fund, he not only empowers investors, but also makes a positive impact on the lives of residents and communities. That's an important part to keep on there. And we'll have a link to this with your contact information in the show notes. So just wanted to put that up on the screen. And as far as the between points A and B, which I just was talking about, tell us about your upbringing and a little of your background, please.
Yeah, so it's just how far back do you want me to go, right? So
well, I think it's notable to say that you're from Russia. I mean, that's a whole different background, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I was born and raised in Russia, in Moscow, and it was an amazing experience in some parts. And then I was playing professional sports, which is took about 90% of my time, right? And it was my focus back from, I would say, from 10 years old until maybe 24, 25 or so. And the best part of it, again, it's you're doing what you like and it's a joy, right? It's like a show. It's a little artificial life because you don't get to interact with people from outside of the sports, right? Because, you know, just basically you come, you train and you perform and you fly to different country, come train, perform. And then it's a cycle of those things and you get salary at the end of the month, which is a lot of fun.
Well, yeah. And, you know, you hear about that when, especially like during the Olympics and whatnot. So it's true. You really, did you live with your family though, the whole time, or did you have to live in a group?
I did. So just sometimes we're going to go to the camps and then some, you know, weekly, I would say performances, and we're going to go fly out somewhere else outside of the Russia back then. So, and stay there for like 15 days, 10 days or so.
And the sport you played?
And they play water polo. I was a professional water polo player. I was a national team player as well.
So what position did you play? Not that I know the positions.
I played a goalie.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. That's the only one I would have guessed. Oh, my gosh. Does that mean you're a glutton for punishment? Wow, you have to be a tough guy for that. Yeah, I guess. I don't I like I told you, I couldn't I don't like getting dunked.
No, it was pretty tough sometimes, you know, when you get the full shot in your face, you know, you got to perform still.
And I'm going to ask you to send that picture we were talking about to me so that we can link it, on the show notes if you don't mind.
I will. Yeah, I
Yeah.
will.
Okay, good. Good. All right. So then you come to California. What brings you to California?
The story was it was my wife's brother who was drafted by Clippers in 2005. And all of my wife's side of the family, right, they were all basketball people and then they played professional. The dad was USSR first of all player and then he was a Russian national team coach for the U15, 16 years old guys. And then the mom played for Dynamo Moscow as well for a while. And my wife was professional player for like about 5 to 7 years, right, of professional career. Played for Dynamo Moscow. I was playing for Dynamo Moscow. My wife was playing for Dynamo Moscow, which is police team in Russia. And her dad was, and then the mom was. So all four of us, can you imagine? All different time frames, generations, but we play for the same team, different sports.
Wow. Yes, that's
Yeah.
amazing. So you got to California. He was playing with the Clippers. Your wife was a professional basketball player in America too?
Not in America, just in Russia. So,
Oh, okay. Okay. So where did you land in California?
we actually landed in the Manhattan Beach, which is one of the beautiful places and where all the professional athletes live. We live. Our neighbor was Alexander Frolov as well. He was a ice hockey player and a bunch of other professional athletes as well. So we landed in the best, I would say, place in the world, and then it's by the beach. And then when I came to visit, I was absolutely shocked. People can live like that in December, January, when it's snowy and it's I would say miserable, right? I would use that word. And it's always dark, right? And cold and snowy, right? So, and when I walk on the beach of Manhattan Beach, it was 2009, I would say November. And I was like, wow, nobody told me people can live like that. And they relax and the flip-flops, T-shirts and shirts. Nobody's like rushing in, and everybody's so nice and smiling, saying hi to each other. So it was like mind-boggling. It was just different experience on Earth.
I can imagine. And as you might know now, because I told you I used to live in Palos Verdes, I was in high school and we'd be going down the mountain, right? And it left turn into school. And if we didn't go in there and we just kept going down, we'd land in Manhattan Beach. And if we wanted to skip school, we went to Manhattan Beach. Yeah. Funny.
Absolutely, yeah. And then one of the experiences, because my wife, mom was searching for different houses, and then one of the choices was Palos Verdes because it's a beautiful. It's a little bit secluded, right? You by yourself there, and super private, and weather is nice always, right? And the biggest part was the commute was tough, and then they have chose
Right.
between Manhattan Beach or Palos Verdes. They choose Palos Verdes. I mean, Manhattan Beach, sorry. Because it was like so convenient to get on the freeway. So you can get 405, 105, and you're in downtown, which is a performance for Clippers back then. They were playing at the, as of today, they are. So they were playing at the Staples Center right now at Scripta.com.
Nice, nice. Yes, well, it's great to have your eyes open to these things. I love it when I travel. I've never been to Russia, but I definitely enjoy seeing those scenic areas that have snow when I'm just visiting, as long as I don't have to stay there too long. Yeah. But anyway, so what got you into real estate?
So this the story was because of 2005, he got drafted 2007, he got cut from the league. Now we're talking about the real life, right? All the fun stuff is gone. So and the idea of the Robert Kiyosaki book, right? The cash flow quadrant and the liability and assets. So it came a little bit later to our family. And in 2007, we start to see, okay, we got so much payments coming in. So we got to get house payment and car payments and food and all the expenses on the telecommunication, right now, you name it. Anyways, all of this expenses start to mount, and then the income just disappeared, right? So, and then it started me thinking like something is wrong, like something is not right. And then we didn't have an investments back then, so we just came from Russia. I was working as assistant judge my last year in Russia, so, and I was lawyer by trade. And back in Russia, we never had an idea of like planning for a future, right? Accumulating wealth for the future. So it was just a simple life. Yeah, you get a paycheck, right? You just, spend it or invest it and stuff like that. So anyways, and once I start to analyze the finances, and then I was the one responsible talking to the banks because we got multiple different line of credits and, and the mortgage and all that stuff. I start to really understand what happened. So I started to really understand the idea between assets and liabilities, right? And I start to really focus in on how we can actually basically negotiate, right? And close all the debts, all restructure all the debts, right, we have. And it took me about maybe 2 years or so. Number one, I didn't speak English as much, right? And then every time when the phone rings and then says, "Oh, Citibank calling you." So everybody likes, give me a phone. "Oh, you're going to be the one talking to me." I was like, "Yeah, I will, but I don't know what to say. Like, I can only talk on Russian with them." So anyways, super scary, right? For maybe a couple months, couldn't sleep. It was pretty tough experience. But at the same time, that experience made me so much stronger, right? To maybe understand what happens, maybe understand what's the nature of this problem. And like I said, we restructured all the debts, and it was in a couple of years. And then we, I was building a spreadsheet of different credit cards, different credit lines, and different credits we had back then, putting them on one spreadsheet, putting the goal next to that, and saying, "So I want to settle that at a certain percentage, a certain number." And so it gave me a budget. So it gave me the budget. Okay, this is how much money I need to settle all the problems, right? And we can restructure and start over again. So that was one. And then once that happened, let's say we restructure the whole thing. We move to a different place, right? We just basically we start to really think through, okay, what's the assets we accumulate, and what is the asset of ours? One of them was business. The second one was just the savings. We start to save money because, again, the good thing. So once you get through the, it's not a bankruptcy, but it was like a tough time. It's like you're really cutting your expenses very, very low, right, to the minimal. But then your life and your energy, I would say, it's blooming. And I was like in my prime, right? So let's say I was like 27, 28 years old, and we're doing the business, and the business was profitable and it was growing, right? And all the expenses are low. And then now you have income, and you got, spare income. You can either like spend it, or you can invest it somewhere, right? Because I had a background from Russia, I already own multiple units of real estate right there. And but it's on my side of the family, right? So I understood what does the asset mean, right? And then how we can build from the, valley of death, I would say, financial death, right, into the prosperity, right, and stuff like that. So anyways, we start to really accumulate cash, and then I start to sell my units from Russia and then transferring the wealth to United States. And my first one was I bought a house, right? And I said, "Listen, I don't want to buy like a brand new house we just developed. I want to buy like a house which is an average, right? The simple neighborhood, not super luxury, not super bad, but it's just an average neighborhood, somewhere in the middle, so we can just change certain things." Speaking of specific property, it was like a backyard, so we just changed the whole backyard. We put some patio there, we put some grass there, so we bought FICO trees and planted them. And we just remodeled the kitchen, and from average houses became a very nice place, right, to live. And we just put in the tenants in place, right? We put in the tenants in place, and they start to pay the rent. And that was the absolutely amazing. That was one thing. And the second thing was when I sold my second or first property, I don't remember, in Russia. So the currency exchange dropped, like, the uncertainty of the economy outside of US, right? The American dollar putting a lot of pressure on the local currency outside of the US, right? So let's say it's Russia, right? So when I 2015, I sold one of the properties. Let's say I got 9 million rubles back then, so which is compared to $300,000 here, right? And then, so what happened is currency exchange rate just spiked, right? And ruble became so much cheaper. So I took a third of that number, like $100,000, transferred that back, received 20 million rubles instead of nine, and bought two more properties.
There you
So
go. Yeah, you learned the currency game.
yeah, the currency gain was the price adjustment lagging the currency adjustment.
Right.
So the currency can just spike in one day or 2, 3 days, and the price adjusting for like 2 to 3 to 6 months, right? Because you can't say people, okay, now your house worth $2 million and you got to pay $2 million for that house, right? It's very hard. But within 6 months, they, little by little, they increased the price. Same as here, right? But anyways, what I'm saying is that was one of the other games I started to play, right? Okay, we can really play that spike game, right? When the currency spikes, you can transfer money. And I did it a couple times after that. So anyways, and then I bought the brand new condos again. So I rented, and it was all cash, no financing. So I just rented to the people, right? And then it just grew by, it's double in value, right? And then just people were paying rent, and I sold them after as well. So anyways, those are the games we start to play. I really start to play with capital, and we start to manage the capital. And probably in 2017 or so, I had maybe, let's say, 7 plus units, right? Probably 7 and 10 units. And the reason I don't remember exact number, I was selling, buying, and start to play different game, right? And then I said, you know what? The more units I accumulate, the more I start to think about that, the more management I start to mount. And if Russian property was simple to manage because people are not calling you every single, let's say, week, not to say day, but some people every day. So they don't call you every week. They call you maybe like once in the 6 months, right? Once in a half a year. So maybe once a year, and then you just pick them up the check, or they send you electronic payment. But then in America and the United States and Los Angeles in particular, it was a different story. They call you if the water is not running well. So they call you if the dust on the carpet, it's just ridiculous request. And I was like, wow, this is impossible. If you multiply that by 10, by 20, by 100, next to impossible. You can't do that, right? And then that was one eye-opening thing. So the second eye-opening thing was, okay, my tenant from single family house left, right? And if you leverage in the bank, right? Because I didn't buy cash, it was like $500,000 house, and I didn't buy cash. It's like ridiculous. And then that's the game of real estate. You got to leverage, right? That 70%, so you can just increase your ROI, right? So basically, what I'm saying is, when they left and you start to pay that mortgage, I'll say, okay, what if you got 5 mortgages left to pay, or 10 mortgages, and you pay it, right? So it's going to be impossible, right, to maintain and keep those properties from the tough through the tough times. So, and now I start to become a little bit more sophisticated. I was saying, okay, how much return on investment I have, and how much return on investment I have there, how much return on investment I have here, right? And then what is the price of capital as well? So I said, listen, if we go into the larger units and we got multiple families, back then I bought in 16, I bought first 4 units, right? And I start to understand, it's if you separate the risk between 4 different families who's working for 4 different employees, right? The risk of them losing the job at once, all at once, it's like very, very minimal, right? And then start to say again, what if you multiply by 100? What if it's 100 people, right? And 100 different incomes and 100 different employees. So, and I start to really, dreaming myself owning an apartment complex. I was like, remember myself in 2018. I was like walking around the streets and like looking at every apartment complex in California and say, I want to buy this. I want to own this.
Right.
Yeah, and the challenge was the price of that asset was like 20 million, 40 million, right? It was like very, very big, large apartment complexes, or maybe nicer places who would just built. And the price in California was insane. And then when you got high price and then the small relative to the price rent, your investment is very boring. Like how much you need, 3%, 5%. And you're really beaten on, really. You betting on, not beating, you betting on appreciation. California game was you betting hard on appreciation. But then I cannot invest in something which is just not tangible, number one, and you have no influence into that thing. You have no say to that thing, right? So does it appreciate? Does it depreciate? You have no idea what's going to happen, right? Tomorrow was California real estate and US real estate. If you based your whole thesis on appreciation and the price, right, of the asset. And then I said, I don't want to play that game for sure. I got lucky, number one. I got very lucky, right? Because I bought that and I sold it, right? And I made money. So, but I said, it's not going to be forever. So I want to bet, right? And I bet hard on something we can control, meaning so there's families, they pay 100, let's say 100 families, they pay an income, right? So there's 3% very modest increase, or maybe 2 or 1%, that's fine. But if we spread it through the 5 years, right, then we got 3% increase and we did a little bit of improvements. That's understandable where the income comes from. That's possible that people want to pay more because they got improved flooring style, you name it, park, right? Outside, interior, exterior, so all of that. So yeah, this is the little backstory, right, of the apartment conversion, my mind into apartment complexes.
Yeah, that's great. And we skip talking about that part a lot, and I'm glad you went into that because a lot of my audience, since I'm newer into it as well, are just starting to realize some of that too. So I'm glad you elaborated because scaling, that's a huge part of it. So many people have accumulated lots and lots of houses and realized how much management it is, and it's way better to just hire professional managers, have them all in one place, much more efficient, effective. And yeah, I am a
So
firm
one other
believer.
thing, yeah, one other, sorry to interrupt. So Jenny, so I just want to elaborate on this idea. So when I hear people like scaling on the houses, that means they in Michigan, that means they in Georgia, right? And they bought $50,000 or $100,000, 20 houses, right? So, and that makes me thinking who lives in that house, what type of requests they have, and then how much management they have. This is just a very, very tough route. And then a lot of people, when I talked to them, they didn't realize what was actually going to happen, right? And they hire property management, right? And it was all working until then. And then things start to crap, right? And, fell apart. And then all of a sudden you understand the property management taking a huge advantage of yours, right? Your cash flow just very, very small. All right. And then if you just calculate that through the years, I'm talking about take 5 years, take all of your cash flow, because nobody's doing that. It's super weird, right? And then you put it all on a spreadsheet and you calculate the return because everybody is like saying, I wouldn't say bragging, but saying, oh, we got 20% return. I was like, really? Let's talk about that. How much time have you spent on that? And I was like, oh, I'm spending every day like 5 hours. I said, 20% return. Now pay yourself like at least 100 grand per year. And then you tell me after that salary, how much is your return? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's very true. So let's fast forward a little bit because I want to be sure we have time to talk about some of your accomplishments too, the things you've gotten into. So you have syndicated as a general partner some properties now, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So what was your first one like and what was that?
So once again, what we did, the tough one was we got the hotel conversion. It was Oakland, California. Great deal from the start because before COVID-19, the hotel was $14 million appraisal. Sorry, $21 million appraisal. So, and then when the COVID hit, and nobody was staying at the place. It was maybe 10% occupied. And there are two older owners, which is in the late 80s, and then one of them 91. And they've been owning that asset for the last 30 years. And they said, you know what? We want to get out. We can't put in the cash right into that thing. So we want to get out. And then from 21, the price came down to 14. So the asset was acquired for 14 million. So, and it started really well. It was absolutely amazing, right? And we had like a, I would say, jump start, right? But then the idea was to convert a units. It was 100, I would say 100, 130 units, which is converting into 130 hotel units, right?
Right, keys,
Rooms where you
whatever,
can
yeah.
stay. So we're converting in 141 workforce studios, like apartment studios. And the first problem came when the deal closed, and then the how do you call this person from the city? The person from the city came to inspector, right? The inspection came.
Inspector, yeah.
Yeah, and when he came and he said, "You know what? You guys buy the water. It's a London Square. You guys buy the water, and then the hotel, usually the occupancy rate between like 60% and 70% at the most, and you're going to be 100% occupied. This is your plan, at least, right? To be 100% occupied, and you got to reinforce the whole basement." You got to you got to get the concrete, right? And reinforced every single pillar, right, on the basement. I was like, oh my goodness. And then that was one. The second one was, okay, so because of the occupancy and because of the there's so much tension, right, it's going to be electricity blockage and all that stuff. So they say you got to do all new electric. So all new wires, all new electric, and then the second was the plumbing as well. So diameter of the pipe is not up to the code, and you got to change it. Anyway, so from 3.5 million, so the budget for that whole conversion was 8.5. So it's basically it's not even double, right? It's more than double. So that was the first problem. And then the second problem came when the construction started. And again, so that was, let's say, couple years into that project. So the construction started, it's already going. And then the delays start to wane. So we got the plumbing delay. So we got the electric delay. So, and then all of that pushes the project, but you're still paying for all the loans. You're still paying for the capital, right? And then so it starts to diminish the return. And that was the hard lesson of saying, okay, do we want to go into brand new construction? Do you want to go into the deep, deep remodeling or construction? And the answer was no. And that was one of the projects. Then the second project was in Texas and Farmers Branch. So we got into the project where we have brand new construction. And then nobody knew that, but there was just the rains, like a couple months of rains. So it wasn't every single day, but it was like day after day, and then the week after that. And because it's muddy, right? So, and because the construction, I'm talking about the heavy, construction cars, they cannot get on the property, right? They cannot get out of the property. So you have to wait until it's all dry out, right? So, because once you start to grade and all, anyway, so that was delayed as well. So basically, the lesson was the deeper you're going into the construction, yes, you do get the better returns. Sometimes you do. But a lot of times, what happens is you got to meet with unknown. So you start to really, deal with things you never accounted for. So, and then that just brings all of your ROI right down and down.
Right. Yeah, it's complicated, and I know you're invested with Mark Schuller as well on one of the projects that I'm in. We just did a webinar on getting started, and he was talking about how much effort goes into estimating to do it properly, and it is something major. And so people that go into the value add need to really be sure that they're talking to multiple people and experts in construction, depending on how deep it goes, like you say. Did those end up okay? Have you closed those out, either one of those yet, or where are you at on that cycle?
Not yet on the both. That's
Oh,
still,
okay.
yeah,
So,
they're still under construction.
yeah, once you get stabilized and hopefully you are able to, make up that distance. I don't know where you're at on that, but you probably can't see the forest for the trees just yet, in a way, maybe, but. And you're into many others though too, and some as a limited, a lot of them as a limited partner, I believe you said. So that gives you that advantage to see how the operators are doing. And I encourage everybody to start that way, just so they can check out people, see how it goes, and get those monthly or quarterly reports, and just get used to what to look for and what might happen, and figure out, for instance, do you like the new construction, or would you prefer the light renovation, or the deep, or the conversions? And then there's different asset types, right? Do you do anything besides multifamily?
So we do a little bit, right? And again, so the idea was the core product for the fund, it's going to be something which is very capital So there's a big amount of money piling in into the multifamily, right? Because why? Because the absorption of capital is huge. You can absorb any capital in real estate of the United States. So that's one. But then the second thing was, okay, once you get through the full cycle a couple of times and you get comfortable, right? And you say, oh, my money multiplied by two, let's say, again, just average speaking. So, and people start, oh, I'm comfortable. Like I want to take a little bit more risk. So what else out there, right? And then one of the steps we took a little bit on the side, we said, okay, can we play within the real estate, but get a little bit more, wouldn't say risky, but a little different game, right? And then, so the land entitlement deal, which is we're working on right now. So we found and that we partner with a really good company, and they've been on the market for 40 years. All they do, they just working on the paperwork. And then us having the experience of going in deep renovations or like brand new construction, right? And encounter all those problems, right? We said, okay, so if we doing, I would say development on the paperwork level, right? There's not almost there's no people, number one, not as much of the people. It's not people intensive, right? Because you need a couple of people who has the connections, right, in the local government or in a local agency, right? So you can just change, let's say, purpose of the land and change the
Zoning.
repurpose that idea, right? And again, so number one, you need to be very close and you need to sell the idea to the city because city do need constant development. They do need the jobs, right? They do need the new projects. They do need the new, I would say, new energy coming to that place. Why? Because now you got to build infrastructure around that. Now you got houses around that. Now you got industrial buildings and all that stuff. So that means the taxation coming into the city. That means the brand new roads, right? Building around those things. Anyways, the parks and stuff like that. So what I'm saying is it's a little bit different play. So, and then the number one thing was, okay, we don't want to play with capital right now. Was I'm talking about that side of it, right? Because the rate is just spiking back and forth, is going up, going down. So nobody knows what's going to be in the future. So, and then when you're dealing with land, a lot of times there's no debt on it, right? It's all pure equity. So we might say, okay, we can hold it not 18 months, we're going to do 24 months in the deal, right? But again, there's no payment on that. There's no risk of bank coming in and say, okay, I'm taking that land right from you. So that was number one idea. So number two idea was, okay, there's a lot shorter time frame and a lot higher return because the return on that entitlement specific that deal right now, it's a 25 plus, right? It's like a 24, 25 plus. So whether in a multifamily at this moment, right, it's about 14, 15, 16, 17, right, at the most, right, because of the price of capital.
Right. That's the return that you're talking about, just to keep
I'm
that
talking about
straight.
return, yeah.
And the trick being, as we were talking about a little while ago, is just that you have to have land that's in a desirable area that has the population and progress of growth going there, and then your level of confidence can be way higher. But yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm starting to dabble in it again too. I have always dealt with it in eminent domain. We always argued about value and highest and best use, and can you change that zoning and this and that. And yeah, so, but well, that's exciting though too. And it's there's so many things to learn from real estate, right? It really keeps you going. So your family, do you have any kids?
Yeah, I have
Oh yeah.
three kids.
Okay. Yeah, you were telling me you have a son that's 6'4" already at 14, is that right?
6'4" at 14. Yeah, he's still growing.
He'll be a basketball player for sure. Or is already, I think you said. Yeah. And
He's
others
already,
too?
yeah, he's developing and he's on the right path. But again, it's all him right now. So I said, we did everything possible for you, and now at the age of 14, so you gotta really kick your brain and start to work by yourself and really envision that goal in front of yourself and push yourself into that goal.
And you have other kids too, did you say?
So we have a boy which is 14. He's the first one, and a girl, and then boys. So they 14, 12, and 10.
Great, great. That's Exciting times. You keep busy, probably, right?
Yes, all the time. Yeah.
Well, so let me wrap this up. I've got to ask you, as I ask everybody, to share with us either a pivotal person or a pivotal event that really has influenced where you're at today.
Yeah. So I think pivotal person was, and I'm big on personal development because, again, so if you want to go from point A to point B, if you do have a right mindset, so it's going to happen. If you don't, it's going to be very hard, or it's going to take a longer time, right? So, and one of the pivotal people was my coach, and it was point of my career when I just gave up and I just dropped sports completely. And I started to work as a, because my first education was PE teacher and coach, and I started to work as a, I think as a, what's the name of that, physical therapist, something like that, in the in the hospital. So, and my coach came up to me and he said, "Listen, just one day I just show up for practice after, let's say, a couple of months of work, and then, and I show up for the practice to mess around with my peers, basically, right? Not as a part of the team, just as just, you know, outside person." And he said, "What are you doing right now?" "Oh no, I'm lying." He called me on the phone. He called me on the phone. He said, "What are you doing right now?" I said, "I'm working at the hospital." And he said, "Listen, just show up to the practice, right? Talk to the boys, get around the pool and ball, right? And we're gonna talk to you." And then I showed up and he said, "Listen, so you're gonna be like, you can work as a physical therapist, you know, the lawyer, whatever. So any time will be life, right? Like any time during your lifespan, right? So with you can play sports only when you're young, when you have a health, when you have a, you know, the resources, right? The internal resources to play that game because it's tough." And he said, "Just so how much do you make?" And I said, "I got this numbers." And he said, "We're gonna pay you double, right? And you just come back right away. And we'll start from there." And that was the pivot. It was like a huge pivotal point because I was serving army and I had big conflict with a Russian national team coach, right? And we kind of split the ways and they banned me from the league. But then that other coach, the person I'm referring to, was pivotal for me because he said, "So you're gonna be experience something you would never experience anywhere in your, you know, lifetime or career. And that's gonna be, it's going to be like a life-changing event for yourself." And that's what happened. Why? Because we start to, I start to become a part of the team and we travel about three times a week in different countries, right? And we start, and I start to expose myself to different experiences, different cultures, different like real estate, and then, you know, places where people leave. And that was just absolutely pivotal and incredible experience for me. And then I really thankful to that person, right? And he just saved my life back then.
So you were competing, but not traveling yet up until then.
I was traveling and competing, but I was kind of giving up on the whole idea of sports and should I even play the professional sports and should I just start the regular work and job and go to basically
That
back to
mindset, right? Yeah,
normal routine, right? And he changed my mindset. He said, "Listen, don't do it. You know, it's too early. You're young." And I think I was maybe 21 back then or so, like 22. And he said, "The whole, you don't see that picture, but the whole world in front of you, right? If you're going to play really well, so you're going to be traveling and making all the money, and then you're going to be just absolutely, you know, you're going to be just mind, it's going to be a mind-boggling experience for yourself. You don't even understand what you're going to experience." And that's exactly what happened. So I got back to that club team, right? And I got back to the Russian national team. And I was, you know, everywhere in the world from there.
That's very cool. Well, I'm glad that you shared that with us. I can only try to imagine, and I've always been in America, so many of us just can't possibly know. But yes. Well, so if somebody wants to get in touch with you, go ahead and share. Remember, sometimes on Spotify and iTunes it's verbal only, so go ahead and say it, and I'll put it in the show notes on the YouTube and others. Yeah. Go
Yeah.
ahead.
So one of the resources, it's a Win Real Estate game. It's like a sports. You got to win in sports. It's a Win Real Sport, WIN realestategame.com. That's one. And then you can download our ebook. So, and find out more how to win in the world of syndications, right? And the multifamily space. That's one. The second one, it's avistafund.com. So Avista Fund, it's very simple spelling, AVISTA.com, right? Avistafund.com. And then lastly, right, you can send me email. It's Igor at Avistafund, which is same spelling, right, .com. And you can send me email. I'll always respond within 24 hours.
Well, very good. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I think there was a lot of takeaways from getting experience in deep renovations to new construction and just all kinds of different nuggets there. So we appreciate that. And so you take care and Merry Christmas.
Merry
And
Christmas,
hold
everybody.
on just a moment and I'll stop the recording. Thank you very
Thank you
much.
for having me, Jenny. Thank you, everybody. You guys have a good one.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Pivot to Prosperity and found it informative, thought-provoking, maybe even pivotal. If you did, please subscribe, leave us a review. Your feedback means a lot to us and helps others discover the podcast. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram to find updated information about episodes, current events, and whatnot. Thank you again for being part of our podcast community. And remember, if you want to know when an investment opportunity is available, we need to have a conversation. So sign up in the show notes below or at pivotalrealestateinvestments.com. Thank you.